Welcome to the 104th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. Welcome. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Before we get started, today I have a guest interview, but I'd like to again announce for the last time probably to join us for the second annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It'll be held next Saturday, January 21st, from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the evening. You'll get a plant-based breakfast and lunch prepared by the chef at Twin Isles Country Club. And you'll hear lectures from Dr. Michael Clapper of True North Health, Timmarie Hagenberger, registered dietitian of Sacramento, and myself. We'll have a roundtable discussion and prolonged question and answer sessions. And I think you'll find it a very enjoyable day. It'll be a positive energy atmosphere. It's in a great location. We're having great weather here in sunny South Florida, so I hope you can join us. You can get your tickets on Eventbrite.com. Just click on Eventbrite.com and search Second Annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. If you're new to this show, I'm a cardiologist that has really changed my practice to become more of a preventative cardiologist, and I would like to say a reversing heart disease cardiologist through plant-based nutrition. So I teach a nutrition course in the evenings. There's a six-session course for anybody that wants to come, but predominantly my patients are there. And I cook and do cooking demonstrations, and we shop, and I teach plant-based nutrition. And they're able to and we do menu planning, and they're able to transition to a plant-based no added oil diet that allows them to get off their blood pressure medicine, their diabetic medications, and so forth. And, you know, we've had great success. Their chest pain goes away. Diabetic neuropathy is greatly improved. Medicines go away. And it's a very positive experience. It's a fun evening. The sessions last about an hour and a half long. And through that, I've been able to really help people more so than I ever have with medications. And that's what led to doing a nutrition conference once a year and bringing in speakers to showcase plant-based nutrition. It's not just local, it's all over, and to provide a day for positive energy and change with plant-based nutrition. One thing that I've experienced in my practice this week was trying to feed a hospital patient plant-based. Now, I would like all my patients when they go to the hospital or patients that I get consulted on that are in the hospital to eat plant-based, but that doesn't happen always. In reality, it's probably about 10-15% of my patients that I get consulted on actually want to change to a plant-based diet. But this particular patient was plant-based, and he was in for a surgical procedure that was pretty extensive. I put him on a plant-based diet, you know, as far as his initial orders. We had terrible trouble getting him to get a plant-based diet. He had eggs one morning. Milk was always on his tray. Post-operatively, beef broth was sent up, chicken broth. But the problem culminated in the nurse on the floor getting a nutrition consult because she thought that he was in danger because of lack of protein, because of his plant-based diet, for his cancer and for his post-operative healing. So that's when I kind of lost it. The role of a physician is to prescribe for his patient, whether it be diet or medication, and if you're a plant-based cardiology, diet is medication. And two, I was quite frustrated that, no, he wasn't getting the right nutrition on a plant-based diet because he wasn't getting a plant-based diet. And so through much discussion with hospital administrators and multiple calls to the dietary staff, and it's nearly impossible when you're on the electronic medical records to order a vegan diet. It's like 8 screens down. It's hidden about as well as you could hide anything. But we were finally able to get him, oatmeal most of the time with soy milk and bananas and blueberries. To get fresh fruit, it's, you know, more than, you know, half a cup is nearly impossible. We were finally able to get that. We worked with a pharmacist who actually had to go to a health food store to get some pea protein to put in his, you know, drinks for a smoothie to try to get him a little bit more nutrition since he wasn't able to eat the regular food that they had to offer that was plant-based, such as a vegetarian pizza or a veggie burger. You can imagine that's not real appetizing post-operatively. So that was a very frustrating week for me. So, you know, I think in the end, by the time he left, we were starting to get some plant-based breakfast. And my advice to people that if you have loved ones in the hospital or you know someone's in the hospital, you really just have to fight for them to try to get a plant-based diet. The more that we educate the hospital staff and demand that at the front of the hospital staff, the more likely we're to get it in the future, and they become, just like anybody else that has to change, they become more accustomed to it. When it's foreign to them, they don't know what to do. So, you know, you can't get too upset with people because they're uneducated. It's certainly frustrating when you're in a setting that's supposed to provide health care and they don't know about plant-based nutrition, but nevertheless, the education process is in its infancy, and we'll continue to plunge on and, you know, try to educate people. But in the meantime, you know, again, if you have someone in the hospital, I would suggest bringing their own food and bringing your own smoothies and going to your local health store and getting drinks if you're in an area that you're not able to do things on your own at your own home. Today we have an interview. It's with Dr. Aiken is the Medical Directory of Psychiatry at Lakeland Behavioral Health Center. He is a child and adolescent psychiatrist by trade, so to speak. He's written The New Ancestral Diet as well as The Cognitive Milieu, and now he has just published Neurodietetics, Food for Flourishing. And this is a great read, as is his other books. He looks at nutrition's role in psychiatric illnesses. He also looks at nutrition's role in inflammation in the brain and development. Most of the time we focus on plant-based nutrition as a way to reverse heart disease and diabetes and hypertension. But this is a real interesting insight on how whole food plant-based nutrition affects brain function. He goes through some dietary hacks, some interesting things that we'll talk about, including just how your Vitamix works and how it affects your micronutrients. He also has a section kind of tracing the evolution of the cell, you know, and when we split ways with the plant and how the plant protects itself with phytonutrients as part of its immune system from predators that want to eat it or destroy it, and they actually help us decrease our inflammation. So there's a lot of very interesting things in the book. I would encourage you to read it. It's written so anyone would enjoy it, whether you're of a science background or not. Again, he has got some recipes that are quite good in there as well. So I'd encourage you to pick it up at Amazon and check it out. But for now, enjoy the interview with Dr. Richard Aiken. I am so pleased to welcome Dr. Richard Aiken again. Dr. Aiken wrote a book called The New Ancestral Diet, and we talked about that on his last chat with me. And now he has a brand new book out called Neurodietetics, Food for Flourishing. And I must say it is remarkable, and it's a page turner. So welcome, Dr. Aiken.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your kind comments.
You know, we often, you know, you and I are plant-based, and we talk, and I do my nutrition class on, you know, the ability to reverse hypertension and diabetes and hyperlipidemia. But when, you know, there's this, you know, the neurology part of this, the neurophysiology that is just all new with nutrition. And this sheds some great lights. And you start all the way back in the beginning with plants and their innate immune system. So let's start at the beginning and work our way forward.
Okay, well, we can start at the eukaryotic stage from whence we come, or the prokaryotic stage. And I mean that's the very beginning of it all. And I won't go through the molecular mechanisms of how the prokaryotes became eukaryotes and then branched into plants and animals, but I will mention one thing I think that is remarkable in this evolution of single cells from a couple of billion years ago into what eventually became kind of bifurcated into animals and plants, and that is that we really became sort of dependent upon the eukaryotes that went the plant direction, and so I mean, and we still are. All the nutrition comes from plants, and if there wasn't if there was not plants, there would not be animals. The animals came sort of after the plants, and both as single cell organisms on up, there was always this relationship of animals to plants, and we were sort of dependent upon them. And I'm not sure, you know, I always had this thought of why is it that plants are so nourishing and make life possible for animals? Is it some kind of an altruistic attitude that plants had along the way? I mean, do they exist just for the existence of animals? And I finally came to the conclusion that they did not. In fact, plants not only are not altruistic toward animals, I believe they would like to, for the most part, eliminate us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that certainly is true for insects and viruses and bacteria, but for animals as well. And I hear the counter argument: well, yes, but animals help plants through pollination, and so eat the seeds, and then they're eliminated and scatter the seeds so that they can increase their existence and don't crowd out in one certain area. And that certainly is true, but I don't think that is a necessary thing. And there's one example that comes to mind that is I think kind of fascinating, and that is the artichoke plant. Artichokes shouldn't exist because the animals that used to eat the fruit, artichoke fruit, and then eliminate the seeds were very large animals. You could imagine an animal that would eat the fruit and then eliminate a seed modified would have to be a very large animal, and they're extinct, and they have been extinct for I believe 20,000 to 30,000 years, and yet we have the artichoke plant existed and continued without this seed dispersal. So, of course, eventually it was farmed, but there was with thousands of years in which there was no farming, there was no, helping the artichoke seed to be dispersed, and yet it existed just fine. So, I mean, I think there is an advantage, but I think that plants would be just fine without any animals at all.
It's kind of an interesting concept because a lot of people think that farm animals were made for us to consume as well. So maybe it's part of the human condition that we just think everything on this God's green earth is for us. So, but I was interested in, the immune response. So the animals, or I'm sorry, the plants, you know, the turmeric and dandelions, these substances in and of themselves are to protect them, but end up protecting us.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, I don't understand it, but there is a different mechanism that we use to make use of a lot of the chemicals that are produced by plants for their own sake. Now, one that is related is antioxidants. I mean, plants do produce antioxidants for their own sake because they have in their chloroplasts when they're making energy from the sun, they have a very intense existence of oxidation requirements, and therefore they must have to accompany that and to modulate it, to control it, they must have very strong antioxidant, and they do, and those antioxidants are used by us. We don't need quite the intensity of antioxidants that the plants do because we don't make energy anywhere near as intense as plants. We just make ATP in our mitochondria. So, but we still need that process needs to have antioxidants around too, because things get pretty hot in a sense, and there could be some pretty bad things that happen.
And let's talk a little bit about oxidative stress, and you talked a little bit about mitochondrial disorders. So mitochondria are the energy centers of the cell, and when you have problems with your mitochondria, obviously it could be diabetes when the sugar is blocked from getting in the cell. There's problems. But there's a variety of things that can go wrong with your mitochondria, and you associate them with, you cite the research with mood disorders and even some dementia. And let's talk a little bit about that. And then also, it's the converse of that is, as a runner, what I try to do is, what you run long and you do your long runs, and part of that is to develop your mitochondria and your muscles to get more so that you can produce more energy. And as I was reading that, well, if you produce more energy, that more mitochondria, that's a good thing. But, is there some role that too much can be a deterioration? So how does that all play together?
Well, it's really a very, very new area of psychiatry, at least, is the area of mitochondrial disorders. There's no question that there are a host of different types of mitochondrial disorders that seem to correlate with mood disorder, cognitive deteriorations, but in anxiety, even psychosis. I'm not certain of the mechanisms that are involved in that, but the mitochondrial disorders are failures in that system. And it's not so much from it's stress-induced or oxidative stress-induced necessarily. But I think there's more gene mutations in the mitochondrial DNA that are associated with the mitochondrial dysfunction. But for runners, that's what it's all about: is increasing the mitochondrial population and more efficiently utilizing the mitochondrial energy for kind of an acute need. This kind of gets into what does the mitochondria need? Well, it needs to have oxygen, obviously, and it needs to have carbohydrates. The mitochondria can use fats and protein, but it's terribly inefficient compared with glucose. So you got to get that glucose, the carbohydrate, simple carbohydrate glucose into the mitochondria, and that's an art, I think, in endurance running, is to have that. You go through your glucose pretty fast, and then you go through your glycogen, that is a kind of a storehouse of your glucose. And then you start hitting a wall, but you can do some things. And one thing, by the way, just talking about runners, I do my best in trying to develop my endurance multi-sport activities myself. And I've a cheat that I found, you probably know about this, that is involved with getting oxygen to the mitochondria and to other tissues of the body, is through nitrous oxide production. And a great cheat to do that is beet juice. Have you used that before?
Yes, and actually we kind of, it's kind of funny, we carry beets in our suitcase, cans of beets, and we get beets wherever we are before the race. Yeah.
There you go. Well, it does seem to help. About 2 hours before a competition or a heavy endurance training session, to use the beets. And I kind of just have a beet juice drink. It's 250 milliliters of an intense beet juice, and at first it was pretty gross, but now I associate it with health, and so I kind of look forward to that splash before I go to the gym.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely works. You know, an interesting anecdote, I had this patient come in, and she had, her blood pressure went up in the afternoon, and she decided she wasn't going to eat, but just kind of on a whim, and, you know, she had beets laying around, so she decided to make herself some beet juice with some greens in it, and she drank it, and her blood pressure went down. And, you know, she attributed it to, you know, not having had dinner, which was partially true because she probably didn't eat the things that would have caused vasoconstriction. But she also got the nitric oxide in, and she did a nice little experiment on herself fixing her blood pressure.
Yeah, it certainly is a excellent food or beverage, in the case of juice, for blood pressure, as is hibiscus. And so I want my blood pressure to be controlled as much as I can. In fact, I want it to be lower and lower. And so I use these techniques. And one thing I do, we're talking energy drinks here, and biohacks for working out. But along those lines, what I do is I take about 5 tablespoons of dried hibiscus flowers, petals, and I put that into my Vitamix, and then I take about the same number of tablespoons of dried green tea, and put that into the blender. Then I put in some citric acid. And we can talk about this later. It's a must do to keep the polyphenols from oxidating with high speed blending. But anyway, then I put in some water and then agitate it, and I can get the after about 30 seconds, I can get the particle size of the tea and the hibiscus flowers below about 100 microns. And with that small of a size, I can pretty much speed up the salivation or the extraction of the water-soluble polyphenols into the solution. So it's like a cheap, a quick way of making tea that's not hot, and it's much more efficient. and it's much more thorough than just the solubility of putting a tea bag into tea. But anyway, what I do with this mixture then is I do strain it, and I put it into my water containers that I then take to the gym. And I usually make about 4 or 5 of these and put them in the refrigerator for the next 4 or 5 days. But then what I'm doing is I'm drinking this incredibly nutritious source of antioxidants while I'm exercising, and it's fantastic. I'm doing several things at once, which is great for a busy person.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that. I'm certainly going to try that. I'm lucky enough to have a backyard full of hibiscus bushes, so I think I have got to start collecting.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. So another reason
fantastic.
For you to come to Florida to come to the conference next year, so
yeah.
that you can get some hibiscus.
Oh, man.
Fresh hibiscus flowers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. So.
Absolutely.
You know, so,
yeah. You're living in the right place.
You're a physician, you're a scientist, you're a psychiatrist, and one of the great things as far as the nutrition goes is it's, you know, we're seeing how it affects mood, and there's a couple different mechanisms. One being, you know, there's a lot of coming out with the gut microbes and how they feed back on inflammation in the brain and serotonin and dopamine production. Tell me about some of your research there.
Yeah, well, let me say first that this is all really new stuff, and I know that they still, I'm pretty certain, in medical school teach what you and I were taught as far as the sort of the cause of mental illness is the monoamine hypothesis, so-called monoamine hypothesis that. And I think a lot of your listeners have heard of serotonin. So the idea is that your serotonin level is low, so that you need to boost your serotonin to be happy. And so you can take medications such as the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors that increases the serotonin between the neurons so that you rebalance. You have a chemical imbalance. You're rebalancing this amount of serotonin. It's not true. Certainly there is a relationship of serotonin, which is associated indeed with transfer of information in areas of the brain that have to do with emotion and good feelings and psychiatric illness, but that's like a symptom, not the explanation. And so, just really in the past couple of decades, but more in the past 10 years, we're understanding there are getting more at the source of why one becomes depressed. And this includes the microbiome. The causes of mental illness include strokes, ischemic hemorrhagic strokes, neural inflammation, oxidative stress, and the one you mentioned, the microbiome. Now, microbiome is the population of bacteria that we have in our gut, and there's approximately 40 trillion bacterial cells, more than 3 or 4 times the number of cells that are non-bacterial cells. In other words, the cells that make up us are fewer than the bacterial cells in our gut, so they outnumber us. But there are our friends And they are extremely important from a number of standpoints when understanding, just beginning to understand what that is. The mechanism of the so-called gut-brain axis, that is how the microbiome or the population of thousands of different type of bacteria in our gut, how that influences the brain is not really well understood, but certainly there's the use of the so-called enteric nervous system that we've known for a long time, the so-called second brain, and communication with it through neuroendocrine and neuroimmune systems that, again, are a little difficult to detail. Endocrinology is just so complicated for me, and I'm just trying to begin to understand that. But there is this existence of a good microbiome that consists of bacteria distribution that is in some sense natural and good. And if there's an imbalance in that collection of bacteria, so-called dysbiosis, that disrupts the integrity of the gut barrier, causes an inflammatory response, and it tends to be associated with mood disorders. And, you know, the details of that, again, are just really early in trying to understand. But I think that this is going to be one of the most important new areas for optimizing our health, not just mental health, but also across the board, a lot of our physiologic difficulties we have is going to be revealed through understanding this, and then at some point, we probably are going to be what I think are already being called psychobiotics, in which we eat certain live microorganisms that, when they're administered in adequate amounts, will create an adjusted microbiome. And it's not going to be. Now, I don't think this is going to be something that will be. You eat something once, and then your microbiome will be improved. It'll require a regular diet of some kind of a microbiotic set of compounds. But next to the epigenetic the new area of understanding, I mean, this is going to be something revolutionary, I think, in the next 10 years.
You know, with changing one's diet to a plant-based, you know, in my class, I talk about the social aspect of it. And, you know, often the failures come specifically around the holidays when, you know, people get into situations where they see their old comfort foods at holiday parties, or they're with family that they haven't seen, or they're in a social situation where they're exposed to all the wrong things and they kind of just say, oh, what the heck? And in your book, you know, you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the role that cognitive behavioral therapy can help with this. And I liked one of your scenarios where you talked about, you know, the pizza scenario when, you know, somebody was tired and they came in, it's like, oh, let's just get a pizza. And the spouse said, okay, well, we can get a vegan pizza. And it's like, well, no, we can't order a vegan pizza. You know, we'll just order a regular one. It'll be easier. And then finally, you know, the spouse said, well, and turns it all the way around. And it's like, well, I'll tell you what, I'll look up a cauliflower crusted vegan pizza and it'll be fun and we'll do it together type of thing. So tell me a little bit about, you know, so how someone's just new to a plant-based diet and, you know, they're experiencing either, you know, families are good sabotagers, you know, they go to visit their kids or their kids come in or their grandkids come in. It's like, oh, what the heck, we'll just get the chicken nuggets and we'll get the McDonald's. And we'll wait till they're gone and, you know, whatever. So give us a little bit of help on and how we might get around something like that.
Yeah, well, The problem is that initially is to change habit, and changing habits is really difficult. But let's take the case in which you have developed a good habit, and then you are faced with a trigger that typically in the past has been one that would lead to going off your diet. And like you say, certainly the holidays are filled with triggers. So I think that it's important, first of all, to kind of reaffirm your commitment and why, whether it would be your physical, cognitive, emotional optimization, or your general health, physiologic health, or ethics, or to look better, lose weight, all the things, all the reasons why you went into the plant-based world, and kind of think about that in an active way, maybe even write it on cards or have some way of kind of bringing that to mind when you're triggered, and know that you will be triggered and be prepared for that. So the cognitive behavioral model is so-called CBT, has been around for about 50 years. It's the number one evidence-based psychotherapeutic technique for a lot of psychiatric illnesses or thinking problems. But it's used, for example, in addiction, and it's probably the number one model to face addiction. And it involves the thinking process. So I have a little acronym that I call TATER, T-A-T-E-R. The T in this acronym is for trigger, and we're all triggered all the time by various things. It can be big or small, good or bad. But in the case of like a holiday situation where there's food in front of you that is meant for your enjoyment for the holidays, and say that presented itself at a party or some other location, know that it's a trigger. And first of all, understand it for that. So when you have this urge, know, oh yeah, that's a trigger. That's I know what this is, and therefore I know how to treat it. Your automatic thought might be, hey, I deserve once in a while to have food that I enjoy. And so that leads to an emotion of wanting to enjoy yourself and kind of a happy feeling that wouldn't it be wonderful? But then you think again, and once you have that emotion, before you respond, to go back to your automatic thinking and is, yeah, I'd like to have this, but this is not in concert with my beliefs. And this can be, by the way, this kind of situation, the reason I put an example of there being another individual, a partner who can help, is that that can be very, very powerful if you should be so lucky as to have a partner who would be supportive in this way. And so I wrote another book on that was called The Cognitive Milieu, and it's the idea of having others that are out looking for triggers for you too. So they may have a trigger, you may have a trigger, but the idea of the partner is to pick up on your trigger and to help you go through this reconsideration of using this tater idea or some similar way of getting through it by thinking it out rather than just going with your emotion.
Yeah, it's very helpful because I think, you know, and I've experienced it myself. When you're with others, you know, it's like, I know my mother used to say, you know, when my cousins, I had cousins that were just my age. And, you know, when isolated by ourselves, we weren't that bad of kids, but we got together and, you know, we really sunk to new levels and got into trouble. And, you know, it also is that way, you know, as an adult, you know, as far as, you know, eating junk food or something like that, you know, when you get with others, it's like, yeah, we could stop, but, you know, let's get French fries, or we're in the car on a trip, you know, it used to be licensed for me to stop at the Dairy Queen, you know, in another life. You know, I tease my, you know, I laugh about it, and tell my students that, you know, I knew every Dairy Queen from Florida to West Virginia because, you know, I got in the car and it was licensed to eat Dairy Queen. And,
yeah,
you know, so now, you know, now my, you know, of course I don't eat dairy anymore, but, you know, to keep from getting going down the junk food route, you know, I try to pre-plan and we try to have the cars, you know, stuffed with, you know, vegetables and hummus and fruit and, you know, stuff to get us past those stops where you might deteriorate.
Yes. Well, that's very true. I think you need with time you can develop some tricks. But I was out to dinner last Thursday with a person in Springfield named Norm Shealy. Dr. Norm Shealy. He used to be a neurosurgeon, doesn't practice neurosurgery anymore. He's 84 years old, but he developed the TENS unit and used to do implants in the spinal cord for neural stimulation for pain management. And he's pretty much a vegan, but he's plant-based, but not truly vegan. Anyway, we went to a restaurant, Houlihan's, Houlihan's. And it's one of those situations where you kind of had to order the ham sandwich without the ham. I mean, which so often I have to do that. It's like, yeah, okay. And the waiter is typically like, you want the meat sandwich without the meat. But sometimes you have to go that way. But I found you can order a lot of side dishes and that are vegetables and/or fruit, and then kind of combine them. You can even have ask for a bigger plate and put them all together and make your own vegetable medley.
Yeah, I actually
there's tricks.
I went to dinner a birthday party at a place in Tampa that's a very well known steakhouse, and they pride themselves on, you know, the million different cuts, giant cuts of meat that they have. And of course, so I went there and I ordered all the side dishes basically that I could get that were plant based. And you know, they weren't really happy with me not ordering meat there, and they brought them out all on individual plates. So I had like eight little plates with a vegetable on them, you know. And it was pretty obvious that they weren't, you know, real happy with me. But I got full, you know, and I was happy, you know. And you know, I was able to socialize with my friends that, you know, weren't plant based. But you know, you can get around it. But if you're, you know, had I been, you know, maybe new to a plant-based diet, or maybe not really wanting to be new to a plant-based diet, as some of my patients are, you know, their hands are kind of forced, you know, because of cardiovascular disease, you know, it becomes difficult to, you know, and it becomes the thinking of it, changing our beliefs that we're not being penalized, you know, that actually by choosing those plant-based options, we're going to feel better afterwards and in the long run, as opposed to that short-lived reward that we think we're giving ourselves. And so it becomes, you know, I guess, aware of what's going on, as you say, your triggers, and also changing how we think or perceive, you know, is that a penalty that I couldn't have a steak, or was that truly a benefit that I didn't have a steak?
Yeah, yeah. That's absolutely, I think, the right way to look at it. And it's very true. The context sometimes, like in a restaurant, is a little uncomfortable, maybe for you and maybe for those that you happen to be eating with, but it's worth it. I try not to make a big deal of it, you know, they say you can always tell a vegan because they'll tell you about it. I try if I'm with a non-vegan, I just do the best I can with the ordering, and if they ask why are you ordering it this way, I'll tell them, you know, but then we'll just move on to something else. But I think the side dish method, I think one reason maybe why restaurants don't like it is it's a pretty inexpensive way to have a meal. You put a bunch of side dishes together, and it's not that expensive.
Yeah, I'm sure it probably wasn't the same as the 1 pound Delmonico or whatever that they had. So before I let you go, I do think that, you know, I was reading the chapter on the, you know, the processing of food, and there's a couple things, but you know, the blender is, you know, often asked the question, you know, is it okay to have the smoothie versus chew the kale, as far as the nitric oxide production. And of course, then the phytonutrients are a whole kind of different story as far as the blending and the availability. But I didn't know how my Vitamix worked until you told me. So I read that this morning. It's like, well, wow, that's how that works.
Yeah. Well, it's the key is the high speed blending is the cavitation. I mean, that's what breaks the cell walls down. And releases the, but unfortunately something happens that is that you have to watch out for, and that is the most plentiful and ingredient or phytonutrient in most contents of smoothies are polyphenols, and when you break the organelles in. It's the cell wall, first of all, and then the organelles within the cell. You release the polyphenols, and you combine them with polyphenylesterase, which is an enzyme that helps oxygen get to react with the polyphenol. Polyphenol is an antioxidant. But you combine oxygen with it, and it neutralizes it. It's doing in the blender what you want it to do in your body. So that's a problem. How do you get around that problem? And there's a biohack, I call it, that you can do, and that is, obviously oxygen is. In this essentially a tornado that you make in your blender with the high-speed blending of a horsepower and a half or more, that tornado has a tremendous exposure to oxygen. So you have the oxygen, you've got the polyphenylesterase, and you have the polyphenol. You're going to decrease the viability of your phytonutrient unless you do something about it. And what you can do about it, this is where my chemical engineering came in, what you can do is you first make available the mixture as, before you blend it, as a citric acid, significant citric acid component. So for example, one lime or one lemon would be fine. And I say this based upon some experimentation that I've done, or even juice if you have it. And so you put that one lime or one lemon into your blender first with water, and then you blend it. And so the result is a high citric acid, a fairly high concentration of sufficient amount of citric acid, so as to decrease this oxidation of your polyphenols. And I don't know exactly the mechanism that's involved chemically, but it's not the pH, it's not other things you might think. It's the citric acid itself that will protect your vegetables, greens, and particularly I usually put the greens in first, from losing their potency. And after that, just go ahead and you can blend the heck out of whatever your mixture is, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, highest speed, and you're going to be okay, I think.
That's very cool. So in that respect, when you purchase tomatoes, like now they'll sell tomatoes in a box, just tomatoes or tomatoes with citric acid, which would you prefer?
Oh, really?
Yes.
So that must be a Florida thing. We don't have that.
The company, there's a company called Pompano or Pompo, but you know, you can get these rather than buying, you know, tomatoes with a bunch of salt, you can get just tomatoes in one of these boxes that are, you know, radiated type of thing. And it's just tomatoes, no citric acid.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
would the phytochemicals be less stable in those, perhaps?
No, I think with the citric acid, that would be the way to go. I think you already have built in the protection of, and you know, this goes for chewing too, for that matter. And I clean my greens with citric acid for two reasons: one, to clean them, but the other is to coat them with the citric acids. When I start blending them or even eating them, there won't be this additional possibility or tendency for oxidation before I can get it down into my gut and have it do good things inside of me rather than still outside of me even when I'm chewing. But by the way, to touch on the idea of blending and the nitrous oxide transformation in your mouth, what I try to do is I love the idea of the blending chews for me. I love that. But I try to have a fairly high residence time in my mouth. So I'll sip my smoothie like a fine wine and kind of just, you know, roll it around in our mouth and let my tongue and salivary glands have a chance at whatever they want to do with it from a digestive standpoint or this production of the nitrates. So I do that. In fact, what I do is I usually I'll have a little bit of, I'll fill the whole blender, Vitamix with goodies, blend it, have a glass, and then I'll put it into a larger container and then put it in a baby bottle cooler, and I'll take it to work. And then every 15 minutes, I'll take a mouthful of my, super goodies in the blender mix, and it's sort of like slow release nutrient thing. And I'm thinking that it's probably better to take your nutrients a little bit at a time rather than just like flood your stomach with you know, with all you got all at once. So I kind of, I do sip on this throughout the day, and I don't get hungry either during the daytime. So when I come home, I'll just have a fairly modest supper.
That's a great idea. Well, I mean, these are, you know, great, great biohacks, and I think that it's an exciting field. You know, I mean, obviously, if you eat well, you feel well, and if you, you know, it's my, again, another quote from my mother, it's, you know, it's better to look good than to feel good, she'll say, but I'll take it one step further, and it's, you know, if you eat well, then you'll feel well, you know, because if your belly's okay and you're breathing good, you know, your mind's going to be nourished and you're going to have a better positive outlook on life, and it's certainly a lot easier to deal with everything else, as opposed to vasoconstricting everything, including the blood vessels that go to your brain and all the different free radicals. It can't help what else is going on in your life.
Yeah. Well, so I'm glad I'm kind of jealous, actually, of cardiovascular illness getting so much attention, and cerebral vascular illness doesn't get much. Both things fair, but I mean, I understand. Obviously, if your heart stops, then you know it's all over. But if your brain stops, it doesn't matter so much if your heart's still going, because you don't even appreciate it. And the brain is more sensitive to ischemic illness than the interruption of blood flow than the heart. The heart can last for up to maybe 30 minutes. You could be clinically dead, but brought back. But once the brain is gone, you're unconscious in 15 seconds without blood flow to the cranium, within 10 minutes, you're brain dead. So it's a pretty sensitive organ. But what's the other problem and difference with the cerebral vascular illness, for example, versus cardio, is that there's no pain involved. You could have a major vascular accident in your brain, and you don't feel it. Now, you may or may, if it involves the motor aspect of your brain, small area of the brain, that you can, others can see it, and you can see it. But it's this insidious buildup of damage that you can't see. And you don't know it exists until it's very obvious, like dementia or psychosis, or this complete personality change and crazy behavior. But it, before that, there are more subtle things, obviously. So just like the brain to get more attention.
Yes, I hope it does. And I think, you know, now that more, I think that, you know, some of the plant-based nutrition data is going to help things out a little bit, because, you know, we're finding that, you know, people, you know, you don't, Alzheimer's is not a death sentence, that if your father or your mother had it, then you're destined to have it. It has a lot to do with...
Right.
The blood flow and the cholesterol in your brains, and you know, with ApoE4, and you know, the Nigerians having, you know, a lot of dual, you know, both sets of genes having, you know, ApoE4, yet a very low incidence of dementia because they eat a very low cholesterol, low fat diet. So, you know, I think there's hope, and you know, I try to attack patients from, you know, all angles, you know, hit them where it hurts, as far as, you know, if I think they're afraid of their heart, we'll go there. But, you know, if you're afraid of dementia, it's like, well, you can avoid this, you know. You that cheeseburger, you may not have a heart attack tomorrow, but you may forget that you ate it, you know, so.
However we can relate to the patient and make the point is the way to do it, and everyone's a little bit different. Most of my patients are interested in weight loss as their complaint. And hey, you want to go with weight loss? Let's talk weight loss. I tell them, if I told you that you could eat whatever, well, you could weigh as much of a certain diet as you want and lose weight, would you be interested in that? And so, yeah, until I tell them what it is, of course, and then they're, you mean I can't have any cheeseburgers? Are you kidding me? You know, but with education, I think it's what got me originally interested in eating correctly. Kind of thunderstruck when I understood the importance of diet. I just did not understand until I started reading and became educated, and then there was nothing I could do but change my diet. I mean, I had to, and it was relatively easy because of the information. It was clear.
Well, you know, I think it is, and, you know, I appreciate your work, and I find it fascinating. And, the book Neurodietetics, I encourage everybody to get a copy. It's well-written. You've got some nifty recipes in there as well, and your biohacks. There's more than we even spoke of. So, you know, I'd encourage everybody to get your book, check out your website, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you again.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I sure appreciate inviting me. I hope I can come up with something else. You can invite me back.
That sounds good. And keep next year in mind so we can get together in person, perhaps.
Absolutely.
All right.
I sure appreciate it.
You have a good evening. Stay warm.
Okay, you too.
All right,
I know you will.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
All right, take it. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks so much. Uh-huh. Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dr. Akin. Again, the book is Neurodietetics, Food for Flourishing, and it is a great read. So pick up a copy and learn something. You can follow Dr. Akin on Twitter at RCAIKEN. His website, moodforlife.com. You can also find book information about the New Ancestral Diet on that website as well, which is thenewancestraldiet.com. If you have any questions for me, you can email me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. Please check out my website, drdulaney.com, as well. Again, I'd like to invite you to the second annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. We'll have tickets open just until next Wednesday, so get your tickets on Eventbrite. .com as soon as possible so we can get Chef Tito a head count, and we'll have a great day. I promise you to be pampered and all your questions answered, and for you to leave energized and ready to be plant-based, plant-strong, and very healthy. I hope to see you next weekend. If not, I'm available for consultation. We can do telemed consultations. As well as any email that you'd like to send. So until that time, eat your veggies, be plant strong, move your body, spread the word that plant-based way of eating is the key to health and longevity.